Hello everyone, good morning. Smashy Business Show today. How are you doing today, Majid?
I'm really good, and Bert, you can see from her smile that she's also doing good.
Yeah,
I guess the weekend
good.
Was good, right?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, so today is November 4, Monday, and a lot of things are happening. The most important thing that I saw in the morning, which is all over the news, is ADIPEC. It's an energy conference which is happening in Abu Dhabi, and a lot of the biggest names in the energy world are going to be there. It's a 4-day, 5-day conference. It started on Sunday with a small pre-event where Minister of Industry and Advanced Technology, if I'm not wrong, the president of COP28 as well, Sultan Al Jaber, His Highness, was there, and he hosted 8 other people, some of the biggest names in the energy industry, and all of them were there. They discussed about energy, but obviously it was called ENACT, ENACT Majlis. So yeah, it hosted a global energy tech, AI and climate leadership something before ADIPEC. It was just a closed room meeting of these big names. If I can find the names, apparently there was a princess there. Yeah, the Majlis included UK's Princess Beatrice, founder of AI Advisory by EQ, Brad Smith, vice chairman and president of Microsoft, big name, Mark Carney, UN Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance, and Chairman of Brookfield Asset Management, Wael Sawan, Chief Executive of Shell, and Murray Auchincloss, Chief Executive of BP, which is British Petroleum. So these guys, they sat together and talked all about energy and everything. And with the problems going on in Middle East, the whole fight and war, and a lot of people worried about what the future of petrol will be, what the future of oil will be, because we remember we talked about that oil prices went up because of this fear that Israel may attack Iran's oil fields and everything, but they didn't. And Iran is now planning a retaliatory attack. So all of this is causing problems in the price of oil. Mm. So I think right now this conference happening, Abu Dhabi, the whole name ADIPEC is a long form, but it's mainly an energy petroleum conference. So they'll discuss the future of petroleum. They'll discuss the future of sustainability, how everyone is going to leave fossil fuels and move towards more sustainable stuff, windmills,
and
solar panels.
Concerning the future of sustainability, we have a very, very big story today. So it was announced that a trackless tram project is going to be implemented in 8 spots
in
Dubai. Yeah. Now, this is breaking news because, you know, this is a huge revolutionary turn for the UAE, especially towards its goal to become more green and sustainable.
And it was the 10th anniversary of the Dubai Tram. Dubai Tram runs between the Sobhas LT and DMCC metro stations, if I'm not wrong. And you can connect to the tram via the metro to travel in that area, the JBR area. So yeah, there was the 10th anniversary of this. And eventually, Dubai's Crown Prince Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, His Highness, has tasked the RTA with assessing plans to introduce trackless trams at 8 different locations within the emirate. The good thing about trackless trams, which have been implemented in Abu Dhabi already, we did a story back like 2 months ago that the trackless tram was running only on the weekends. And then they moved towards running them in the morning on weekdays as well. And now the trackless trams in Abu Dhabi are running throughout the day, 7 days of the week. So it has now a 12-hour running time. So those trains, they thought it's a good idea. Plus, they don't need a whole setup of tracks and stations and everything.
Yeah.
They can, through AI, obviously, they can follow a colored line.
Mm.
And it's supposed to have 3 wagons which can carry around 200 people, I read.
Yeah.
So it's a good sign that they're trying to increase public mobility.
Mm.
They're not focusing on reducing the cars on the road by making the cars expensive or the fuel expensive.
Yeah. And just to like provide more context, this is going to be very, this is going to reduce, production costs a lot for the UAE's transportation, because this trackless tram actually has faster construction and lower costs. And just for a bit more context, it was actually directed by Dubai's Crown Prince Fazal.
Yeah.
So he was the one who initiated the process with the RTA for them to begin this plan. So it's still in process.
Yeah.
It's not done. Meanwhile, we see that in Abu Dhabi, this has sort of been implemented already.
And people are a lot happy because Abu Dhabi doesn't have a metro. That's the X factor that Dubai has. They have a metro. Abu Dhabi doesn't. So they still rely on their bus network, which comes under the Hafila. Hafila, I guess, in Arabic is a bus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Hafila card you have in Abu Dhabi and you can use the bus with that. Like you have an all card in Dubai and you can use buses, metros, trams through that NOL card. So Hafila, under that plan, they have these trackless trams which are running. So single card for multiple users. So Abu Dhabi and Dubai are like trying to one-up each other.
Yeah. They're constantly
So Abu Dhabi introduced a trackless tram. Now Dubai wants it. And most probably Abu Dhabi. But the thing about Abu Dhabi that I've always considered, that why don't they have a whole metro system? Because it's such a nicely well-planned city. It's built on a grid. I remember a taxi driver told me this because he was like, you can never get lost in Abu Dhabi because whenever you take a wrong turn, just take two more right turns and you'll be back on the same road. So it's built very nicely on a grid. There's like 6 roads like this and 5 roads like this, the main city. Then you go towards, obviously, the other islands, Saadiyat Island, Yas Island, and then Reem Island, where I lived. So, yeah. So these 3 places are very different, but the main Abu Dhabi city is built very nicely. So I guess they don't think they need a metro system because Dubai is very long. Mm-hmm. Abu Dhabi is like a perfect square or rectangle shape, and you can get access to a lot of places. So that's the good thing. To each his own, I guess.
But with this story, I find that it's so important, and it really is breaking news because I feel that the world doesn't care about climate change enough.
Yeah.
And climate change, if we don't come up with a solution for climate change, we risk to lose everything that we've ever built. And I think that often it's overlooked that for, you know, climate change to actually be overcome, we need the finance.
Really, the money is very important. Yes.
It's really important because all of these green projects, of course, they're all very green, but they're all very expensive too.
Yeah.
That's the thing about
it. It takes a lot of money to build a sustainability project. It's not like just you wake up one day and be like, okay, let's start a sustainability project. The whole infrastructure needed for it is very important. That is why this is one of the greatest signs, good signs, that trackless tram doesn't need such a big building of infrastructure. You can just most probably take one lane on the road and color it so that AI and the whole system can recognize it and just follow that line. The most important part that I think is when you look at the metros and the tram and everything, a lot of people use it. You know, taxis are not affordable enough for everyone. A short trip would cost you 20-30 dirhams at least. And when you go to metro, the highest price for one-way trip from one corner to the other corner is 7.5. So you can cover like long distances in very low prices. And these things, when they come into implementation stage and we see them running on the road, most probably they'll be valued around this point because public transport is the solution, the immediate solution for sustainability. Then obviously you
build... Because everybody uses it.
EVs are coming into UAE. We talked about this, the whole EV industry as well on one of the episodes. You can go back and watch all our episodes on YouTube and Spatchy.tv.
But also recently, me and you, we also discussed how the UAE does have a plan to, you know, finally have a business fund to actually get all of these climate projects on track, and that they should be implemented. Well, not implemented, but other countries are finally going to be held responsible to investing into climate change in the upcoming COP, COP 29 in Azerbaijan.
So this initiative, you talked about agenda, UAE's Green Agenda 2030 is basically the idea, which is the whole big plan. Mm-hmm. And under it, these small things are happening, these initiatives are happening. So they're trying to reduce their dependency on oil. They're trying to reduce their carbon footprint as much as possible as a country itself, UAE. So this move is, in the broader perspective, a very small move, but a very important move.
It really is an important move. And we see...
Eventually, we'll see it in Sharjah, Ajman. Ras Al Khaimah is being developed a lot.
We already see climate solutions in the UAE. I feel that it's embedded into the very culture of the country. Like, do you see garbage on the ground?
No.
In Dubai? Like, ever? No. Like, and you know, it's to the point that because they hold, I'm pretty sure there's a fine for it. Like, if a police officer sees you throwing something out the window or somebody does, they can report you. And because it's embedded into the very culture of Dubai, Imagine, I'm not even joking, when I'm taking a walk in the street and I see a piece of trash on the ground, even I get triggered because I'm like, why would you do that? Like, yeah. The streets are so clean. They're so perfect.
Why would you throw anything?
I get irritated because it's embedded into the very roots of the country, and that's what I love. They didn't just, you know, they didn't just make it this big project and, you know, that they're promising everyone. It's something that they have in, like, just the small things in the country, the small activities, things as simple as just clean up after yourself.
Yeah, we see a lot of influencers walking with white socks on the roads of Dubai and telling, see, they're still white. So yeah, I tried that with my son. I put him in white socks and left him in a mall. And when I turned him up, like after 10 minutes of walking, they were clean. So yeah, Dubai is very, very, very particular about these things. I remember just one number before we move on to the next story. We had Tetra Pak's sustainability head in the MENA region come on our show, and he talked about one thing which always will stick with me. He said that in the UAE, there are landfills all over the world. Mm-hmm. Landfills are used to store waste and eventually it decomposes. So landfills, one full high-end truck load was about 10 dirhams if you go and mm-hmm. throw it. Now they've increased just 200 or 150 dirhams, according to him. So he said that they've increased the price, so people are now moving towards less waste production. Mm-hmm. So any company that has more waste production, they're trying to reduce it because the cost attached with throwing that waste in the landfill has increased. So UAE has a very good policy in everything where they always put a deterrent there, and then people automatically become like, okay.
Did they add a tax to it?
Yeah, no, it's not a tax. It's just that there are landfill sites across the UAE. Obviously, they're everywhere in all across the globe. It's not nothing new, but they increased the amount for one truckload. So it was 10 dirhams according to him, and they increased it to 100 and 150 dirhams. And companies which produce waste, they don't produce it in like kgs, it's tons of waste material.
Yeah.
So it comes with a cost. That is why companies have started reducing their waste automatically.
You know, imagine,
so that's a good sign.
The UK does something very similar,
yeah.
But they actually use the tax to employ this.
Oh, okay.
So like your tax as a company, it will increase
if
you produce more waste for the landfills.
Nice. See, so there is a deterrent everywhere. Here they increase the price. In UK, it's tax-based.
But at the same time, don't you think there'll be corruption within that?
No.
Because like, for example, right?
In UAE, you can't expect corruption anywhere.
But think about it though. Wouldn't somebody maybe burn their waste?
No.
Isn't that in itself
even
air pollution?
If you're burning waste in UAE, if you're caught, it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars of fine. You have to throw your waste, whatever you are doing with your waste, you have to be very careful. You have to follow all the laws and regulations. Because in UAE, you can't get away with anything. So that's the good part. The law is it's not very strict, to be honest. Everyone calls it strict. I call it a good implementation. It's not strict, it's a good implementation. Everyone knows the laws and they follow it because obviously they don't want to get fined.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, let's move on to the next story.
Wait, I found a specific number, by the way. So if you're a motorist and you are caught littering on the road, that's a 1,000 dirham fine.
Nice. So say 1,000 dirhams.
Okay, and then it's 10,000 dirhams if you're dumping agricultural waste, such as like in farms, in gardens. Yeah, so it does go up to 100,000 dirhams.
Depends on the level of pollution or the level of problem that you've created with
your waste. You also get 6 black points.
Nice. So companies have black points as well. That's new. I thought only the driving license came with black points, but companies do also come with black points. So let's move on to our neighbors, Saudi Arabia, PIF, the Public Investment Fund, the biggest sovereign wealth fund in Saudi Arabia, a $970 billion mammoth. They've taken a major stake in the MBC Group. They've acquired a 54% stake in the MBC Group from the Istidama Holding Company for $2 billion, aligning with the kingdom's Vision 2030 strategy. Obviously, whatever UAE does, Saudi Arabia does, or their PIF does, it's in line with Saudi Vision 2030. And the deal is waiting regulatory approval. So the acquisition strengthens Saudi Arabia's media footprint, emphasizing its commitment to the entertainment sector and potentially accelerating MBC's international expansion. So yeah, $2 billion, MBC will now try to expand in the international market. They're already well-known, right? MBC, I've seen.
Very well-known.
Even in our country,
I grew up watching
MBC.
I grew up watching it. MBC Bollywood, MBC Max, MBC Action. It was my main form of entertainment.
Good.
It really was.
Yeah. So yeah, NBC is doing that, with NBC's profits up nearly 45% through its streaming platform, Shahid. And remember, Shahid is one of the biggest success stories of a streaming platform,
yeah,
originating from Saudi Arabia, or at least we can say the region. They have broken viewership records. They have broken show records. Their shows have been the best with viewership. So this acquisition by PIF could lead to further innovations and stronger regional influence in media. Saudi is now investing in entertainment as well. We talked about it a lot. They have a whole entertainment hub planned in the NEOM project as well, which is again a $1 trillion project. $1.5 trillion, I got the exact number. So NEOM, the whole project is $1.5 trillion in cost that the Saudi Arabia has to like bear. So yeah. This is one of the news that happened over the weekend. Obviously, we were not there on Sunday.
But interestingly, to me, when I take a look at this, why would they do that? Why? I mean, it's a very large investment fund. Why would they acquire 54% of NBC? Because if you think about it, when you acquire, I believe, more than 50% of a company,
that means that
you are taking over and you can make the decisions and they can stand even if the other stakeholders disagree with you. And the way that I think about it, Majid, is by them, you know, buying such a large stake in a very famous entertainment company, I don't just see this as, you know, Saudi Arabia diversifying its economy further. I see it as a form of power.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, entertainment influences people. Yeah. Like, have you ever watched a movie, a TV show, and you want to do something in action simply because of something that you watched?
Yeah.
I truly see this as a form of soft power. And, you know, they're taking over entertainment to almost control what people see and what people watch and what they consume.
Yeah, the main thing is, see, Saudi Arabia, what I've seen is PIF, it's not just a bank account with $950 or $970 billion. They want to increase the amount. They want to increase its size. So there's two things that you do. You go to startups, you invest in startups, and you hope that they'll scale up to become a unicorn in like the next two, three, four years.
They take time, though.
Yeah. But there is also a very safe bet. You go to companies which are already making profits. So NBT is already making profits. So you go take over and then you reap the benefits. So if they invested $2 billion over like next four or five years, they'll make a lot of money from the profits that the company makes.
Yeah.
So it's a very good idea. It's just basic finance or economics that money makes money. So yeah, this is some of the PIF investments in very well-known established brands is because money makes money. They're doing just that. It's not like a very strategic long-term plan. It's a very simple plan that this is what. And obviously, we talked about it a lot. Saudi investing in Saudi. You remember the FII opening day? The governor of PIF, he clearly said that the outward investment that is like 30% of PIF going outwards will now reduce 10%. It will be down to 18 to 20%. And we'll invest that 10, 12% that difference inside. So this is one of the moves that you can relate to that. That FII event, governor of PIF saying that this is going to happen, it's already happening. Mm. Also, whenever we talk about any Saudi startup, the recent stories that we did, I saw this. They're always getting investment from their VC funds, which are based in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So all the startups in Saudi getting funding from their own VCs, the big Saudi PIF investing in Saudi products, Saudi established brands, it's all like now coming back to the country. They don't want to go outside.
Yeah.
Even if they want to, they will go for a very safe, very sure shot profit-making entity. They're not going to just splash their money into everyone now.
But
they want the people, to be honest, the FII summary for me was, they want everyone to come and now invest in Saudi, not the other way around. Not Saudi splashing money on Sotheby's or some of the big names.
But this decision, it's not just an investment into Saudi, because NBC, it's a very famous streaming platform for all Middle Eastern countries and even certain countries in the sub-Saharan Africa. So I do still believe that it's not just money making money.
Yeah, it's soft power, obviously.
Yeah, it is. Like they're implementing control I believe that the strongest form of control that you can implement in this day and age, it's over the media.
Media.
I really do feel that if you control the media, You do control everything because you control obviously. The narratives that are being released.
I would say it's a very simple game. You control the narrative, not like the bad narrative. There is no bad narrative with the Middle Eastern countries, and especially Saudi and UAE. Whatever they say they are doing, there's nothing like dubious involved in it. It's a very simple game that, oh, we have money, we're investing it inside, we're investing it outside as well. So we just want the people to know a good picture. For example, the very recent Invest in the Emirates campaign by the UAE, we placed so many billboards across Europe, everywhere. The main idea is that people there, they should see what UAE is trying to do and come and invest in the UAE. Likewise, Saudi Arabia going into entertainment and media, they will use the platform to send the message out that, oh, we're open for business. They recently changed their ownership laws and some laws basically in Saudi Arabia. So now external people who want to invest in Saudi Arabia, they get more legal help, they have less tax. So they changed the law. They just want to tell the world the door is open, come invest in our country, invest in our startups, invest in our established brands, invest in the Saudi Vision 2030. That's the main idea. So yeah, good for them that they got a product which can, which has a big network, to be honest. NBC is very big, and they can send that message out to the world.
And so, just on the topic of Saudi Arabia. Last week at FII, the conference held at Riyadh, something really special has happened. So Elon Musk, you know, we've seen that, you know, he has X, he has Tesla, and now he is actually raising funds to scale his AI startup, I believe. It's called XAI. And what he did is that at FII, there has been discussions with investors from Saudi Arabia and Qatar to raise about, I believe, $45 billion dollars.
So he'll raise a lot of money, and eventually XAI's valuation will go up. So it's a good development that one of the biggest names, the richest person on the planet, is...
He keeps going.
It's asking for help from people who are the richest people in the world, to be honest. Right now, if you see all the sovereign wealth funds in Saudi Arabia, in Abu Dhabi, in UAE, overall, they are one of the richest people on the planet right now. They have so much money they've made throughout the years, not from oil only, but from their diversification. They've invested in other industries apart from oil, and they've gotten returns now. So the money is there now. So XAI approaching them is like a good, very good move. It shows the potential that Middle East now has. It's become the go-to place for people to ask for money or invest. So both ideas are great right now. Elon Musk doing this, again, very, very good for the world to see that even the richest guy in the world is coming to Middle East and asking like, oh, I have this startup, I have this thing, let's invest in that. So again, very big power move, to be honest, not from
It goes
Middle
to tell
East.
How
it's the, a very passive power move. They didn't do anything. They were just sitting with the money, and Elon Musk is like, can I have please a piece of the pie? So yeah, we've seen a lot of companies come to Abu Dhabi global market. We've seen a lot of companies come to DFM. A lot of companies now setting up regional headquarters. We talked about TikTok. Yeah. TikTok is setting up a regional headquarters in Saudi Arabia. Everyone is coming to this region to do something. They don't want to miss out on the opportunity. It's like the new Europe, to be honest. I wouldn't even call it new Europe. Middle East has created their own script in history. Like 20, 30, 40 years down the lane, the kids will be taught that how they did it. So it's going to be a whole blueprint of changing the landscape of a region. So yeah, other regions can learn from it, obviously. So that's the news, I guess, for today.
That's the news. And
we have a guest now.
We have a guest. Yes. And as Majid said, in this region, a lot of things are being created, especially startups.
Yes.
We have a very, very special guest for you guys. If you're interested in starting your own startup, I would say tune in to see what they have to say about that. They're from Founder Connects. Hi, everyone. We're back. We have the very special founder and CEO from Founder Connects, Ronnie Hatch. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Yeah. So let's start with the basic question. What is Founder Connects?
So Founder Connects is basically an online community designed to increase the chances of success for startups in general. Because we all know, and it's a worldwide statistics, by the way, and not just particularly to this region, that 90% of startups, they tend to fail from the first year. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the 10%, 50% of them, they tend to fail in the next 5 years. Oh. So we kind of build that community in order to, you know, increase their chances of success by providing them mm-hmm. connections, resources, and knowledge, basically.
Oh, nice. So how do I register on it?
So it's online. It's free to join. Definitely, we do have a paid package in order to maximize, you know, the resources and the knowledge from the community itself. Mm. And it's Founder Connect.
Yeah.
As it's on the Connect, basically. A lot of people get confused with Founders Connect.
Yeah.
It's founderconnect.com. And you know, today we have around 190 startups inside inside the community.
Wow.
And we just launched it in May 2024.
Nice.
So it grew really fast. It showed, you know, how much people kind of need that kind of support. And a lot of people don't know that founders they feel pretty lonely sometimes because you know they can't really get out whatever they're feeling about their vision. So whenever they're around similar people, you know, that's where things
become.
It's
nice to find somebody to believe
exactly,
in you.
Exactly.
And I saw on the website you had a lot of founders from a lot of people, like our founder, Richard Fitzgerald, as well.
Yes.
So how do they contribute to the whole idea?
So, I mean, founders like, you know, Rich and similar to Richard, you know, that have built, you know, big startups and even organizations. So they, you know, they were kind enough to share their knowledge back and inspire, you know, these other smaller startups, because eventually the community was built in order to support the smaller startups at the end of the day, not the big ones that already have a lot of support around them, right? I mean, we have a lot of, you know, prominent founder figures inside the community that are there because they just want to give back. Mm. It's as simple as that.
So right. I can see that, you know, because you guys have a lot of founders, they contribute that expertise to all of your clients.
Yep.
But what other specific tools do you guys use to help small startups thrive with you?
So there's a lot of tools that we tend to use. Now, when you say community, unfortunately, a lot of people, they think, you know, it's just a fan base, and then they just call it community. A community is really, you know, a closed space where we have one common interest and a common responsibility as well. So this is where you see a lot of founders, you know, within our community, they tend to try to help each other. And when does it really become a community? When there's that, you know, peer-to-peer-to-peer basically engagement. When that triangle happens, all right, this is when it becomes a real community. This is when it becomes, you know, when you feel a sense of belonging.
Yeah.
All right. And this is, you know, this is one very important thing for founders nowadays. And we do have a lot of partnerships, going back to your question about tools, all right. We do provide a lot of credits and discounts, you know, on a lot of these tools that these founders tend to use in order to help them save on a lot of their costs. So since May, we've already saved them more than $1 million on their costs.
Nice.
Wow.
And you're talking about, we have more than 420 tools. So you're talking about tools from Microsoft, Amazon, any kind of tool, you know, customer support tool, email marketing tools, any kind of tool that comes to mind. Because, you know, we call it a tech stack, right? Whenever we want to get a, you know, our startup or our product to streamline things. So there's a lot of tools that we end up paying a lot of money for it. And then you end up realizing after a month, like, whoa, you have $1,000, $2,000, you know, and expenses just on tools, just to make things work.
Yeah, I can see there's
so imagine saving this whole thing and just using this money, you know, putting it into growing your startup. Yeah.
It's like Hootsuite, ChatGPT, Canva, everything
even,
that you
even
can
OpenAI,
think of.
Even OpenAI, you know, we have a partnership with them where they give our members $5,000 in credits. So they can actually use, because, you know, I mean, AI today is the biggest topic.
Earlier you were discussing how a lot of startups within the first year, they fail. What are the specific failures that you believe lead to these, you know, this big downfall? And how do you guys as a company, how do you address these failures?
So the problem we see, the biggest reason of these failures are caused because of being a first-time founder. And unfortunately with first-time founders, you know, I always tell some of these founders, don't get blinded by your vision, all right? Don't try to immediately jump on the wagon and build whatever is in your head. And it's human nature. You know, we tend to, I fell for this mistake back then. So what happens is we get too excited whenever we have an idea. We start building. And sometimes it can take from a year up to 5 years building a product, depending on how complex your product is, right? And then you end up launching, and then you go like, okay, this is not what I expected. I thought, you know, it's gonna go viral, and, you know, things are gonna work out, but that's not the reality.
It doesn't happen to everyone.
It doesn't happen like that. And the reason why, you know, a lot of these first-time founders believe, you know, or have this wrong perception is because of media entities. And you're a media entity today, but it's not because you're, it's not, there's nothing wrong that you're doing, but because your job is to, you know, talk about, you know, what's happening around you at the end of the day. And you will only know what's happening around you when there's a success story, right? So you won't know if a founder fails. It's impossible to know. So,
and they don't want that story to come out as
They don't want that story to come out, right?
Yeah, we see a lot of startups who pivot. Sometimes they plan, they get a good start, but then they don't do good and they pivot. They never tell the story.
They never tell the story. So how would you know, right, as someone that works in the media? So you will only know success stories. So therefore, this is the only thing that's available for you to cover. And a lot of these founders, new founders, this is what, you know, they kind of have that perception, you know, of these stories that, you know, if they did it, I'm going to do it. But they don't understand what goes behind of these success stories. There's a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of sweat, a lot of, you know, a lot of failures that went through it, a lot of pivots. So they just see, you know, the tip of the iceberg, like they say.
So this, the main thing that we're going to talk about, the Youth Startup Program. It's a 12-week, like, very focused program.
So
what does it do?
So look, that's the thing. Because of that journey that I just spoke about, right, about first-time founders, as a community, a couple of members, including myself, you know, we joined forces in order to create a program to really empower the youth, all right, by teaching them reality today, right? So we created YSP, which stands for Youth Startup Program, and it's a 12-week program, once a week. It's basically an immersive virtual program, is as if, you know, you're doing it in person, and it was something very, very important for us. So we're like, you know, how can we make it easy for these students to join, all right, without the parents having to worry about, you know, all the logistics and dropping them and picking them up. But how can we still, you know, hit that that feeling of them being able to get the same feeling that they usually get as if it's an in-person workshop? So we're using, you know, sophisticated tools in order to achieve that specific purpose, right? So it's not gonna happen on Zoom, it's not gonna happen on Google Meets, you know, there's, you know, way more advanced tools that we're gonna be using in order to achieve this. And for us, you know, the mission is basically to help them turn their dreams into startups. But that's what we want them to come out with, right? But there's a, you know, there's a much deeper, basically goal that we as instructors, all right, want them to achieve, which is to learn the journey,
yeah,
right? Mm. Which is like, we don't want them to go through what we went through, you know, yeah, initially. We don't want them to waste 2-3 years building, and then you end up, you know, wasting a lot of money. But what's more important than money is your time that you can't get back, right? So, so we're like, let's, you know, create something that is really short. All right, what we're like, what is the shortest timeline that we can actually get these students to come out with something viable and working? All right, and this is where we came up with that 12-week program. So during these 12 weeks, they're gonna learn, you know, basically the journey on how to come up with your own app, all right,
okay,
and what it takes to come out with your own app, and the things that you need to do in order not to do the mistakes that usually most first-time founders do, such as start from building. You don't start from building.
Yeah, okay.
You start from understanding, you know, the market. Mm. You start from understanding, you know, the problem that you're trying to tackle,
yeah,
and then you start asking around, you know, like, hey, I know that there's this problem, but, you know, how do you think I can solve it for you? Mm-hmm. If I do this, you know, would it stick with you or would it not? And so there's a lot of, you know, going back and forth when it comes to building an app. So this is, you know, this is the deeper meaning or the deeper goal that we want to achieve as instructors during this program. Just, you know, by teaching them reality.
Yeah.
And by teaching them not, you know, to avoid basically the mistakes that we actually went through previously.
Yeah.
They're basically going to broaden their vision, not a tunnel vision of just, I think the idea is good and let's just...
Yeah, no, it's not going to work like that.
Yeah.
It's not going to work like that. On the contrary, the whole point is, again, you know, what we want them to come out with is a tech startup, what we want to achieve as instructors, all right, is literally teach them, you know, the journey, basically.
Mm.
And this journey is what will set them, basically, and get them ready for the real world.
Mm.
Even if they don't come up with a you know, tech startup at the end of the day, because it depends on the student.
Yeah.
How much you put, you know, into this program is how much you're going to get out of it, right? But you will still learn, at least, you know, how the journey looks like,
yeah,
what you need to do in order to achieve a specific milestone that you want to achieve. Because that, if you're not going to achieve it today, hopefully you'll achieve it, you know, in the near future.
And there's, Ronnie, there's something that you said that really caught my attention. You said that you don't want these students to go through what you went through. And, you know, just to add, just so we can all get to know you better, what did you go through?
So it's not just about me, by the way. It's about most first-time founders.
Yeah.
You know, they just think they're, you know, they have an idea. And today, even if you ask the youth, right, they have that perception, hey, look, you know what, if I have a good idea, I'm going to, you know, open a business and I'm just going to become a millionaire. It doesn't work like that. And we all have that perception.
Like hope is good, though.
Hope is so good. But reality is even better.
Reality is even better, yeah.
Reality is even better because that's the thing, right? Because if you end up, you know, not knowing, you know, the formula or the journey,
yeah,
and then basically reaching a wall, you know, at the end of that journey, that's probably going to cause you a lot more, you know, stress and hurt. It's going to hurt you more, and you know,
more than money, it's the time.
Exactly, time.
Because it's like you always have these 2, 3, 4 prime years where,
yep,
you have the energy, where you have the creative,
exactly,
capacity also.
Exactly.
So it's like not trying to go down that rabbit hole where you're just creating,
yep,
creating, and just changing every day. Just, yep, trying to get the product which is the perfect market fit, which you think you can scale up and everything. So founders, a lot of founders that are there with Founder Connects, most probably they're going to also be teaching in these classes or...
So yeah, I mean, we're a couple of founders, all
okay,
right, inside the community that actually, you know, we joined forces in order to,
okay,
teach these students. And every single basically founder has, it's session-based, we're session-based instructors, right?
Okay.
So we have founders that are specifically, you know, really good at building financial models, for instance, because their app is a fintech app.
Oh, okay.
All right, so yeah, they're going to be leading the class where they will teach you on how to craft your financial model. There's other founders, for example, the MVP sessions, all right? The MVP sessions are probably the one of the most important sessions in the program. MVP stands for minimum viable product, all right? So build the minimum in order to test the market. And unfortunately, a lot of people know the theory of MVP, but as first-time founders, they never apply it. Because again, we go back to that human nature that you always get excited, you know, to always, you know, build bigger and bigger and bigger, thinking that you're going to be the next Mark Zuckerberg within, you know, overnight. So second-time founders understand the true value of MVP. They know that, all right, you know what? What's the minimum thing I can build, all right, in order to test the market? So I can see, will it work or will it not, right? And then if it doesn't, then it's okay. I just wasted a bit of time. And I just wasted a bit of money. Instead of wasting a lot of time and a lot of money.
For example, the minimum viable product is like if you have a registration form, if you don't need the numbers of people who are registering, don't put it. If you only need the emails, just put the email. Don't make a field for numbers.
Yeah, so basically, you know...
very small like, example.
That's a very, very small example. But literally, it's about, you know, which... Because we have a session to identify the core features, right? All right. So, and during the session, you're going to have to go out there, all right, and ask people and do a lot of surveys and interviews or, in order to really understand which of these, you know, features will be the most important features for these people, all right? So I can launch my MVP with. So assuming, I always give this example, all right, it's just stuck in my head. But for example, you're launching an app, all right, that connects people with activities, for example, related to their hobbies, right? There's hundreds of hobbies out there. Are you going to launch with the hundreds of hobbies out there? Probably you're going to fail if you do this. So you identify, you know, what are the top 2, 3, 4, maximum 4 hobbies that people are mostly interested in, and then you just launch your MVP with them.
So that branding. You guys provide insight for that.
So it's not about really branding. It's about really trying to understand, you know, the people that, what are people mostly interested in, all right, in order to launch my MVP with. Okay.
So if they're into running, gym, maybe swimming, the biggest you'll find.
The biggest activities.
Out of the 100, take the top 5 and just launch with it. And then you can obviously add them. Just to test them.
Because I'll tell you why, if you launch with 100 hobbies, why you'll fail. Because eventually your energy is going to be divided across all these 100. Because eventually you're going to have to start targeting swimmers. You're going to have to target, you know, other hobbies, all right? Other people that are interested in all these hobbies. So that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work for a founder that, you know, doesn't have a lot of resources or, or a big team. So that's why you tend, you know, most of the time you tend to fail. But if you focus all that energy into one activity or only two activities, all right, that's where you have a better, you know, chance of success. I know startups that started from a WhatsApp group.
Wow.
That was their MVP. You know, they just wanted to test out their ideas. They started a WhatsApp group, and it grew into an app. And not long time ago, they raised $4 million for their app. So, and it's working very well.
What is it called?
It's called Alguru. It's in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, so if you have a like market for product, why not start with WhatsApp, right?
Exactly. Like whatever, like you don't have to really start big. You just have to start. That's it. Whatever it is, you just have to start. Even if it takes a form, a simple form, just put it out there. See if people, you know, like your idea.
I just have a question. You know, being part of the youth community, I've been seeing that there are a lot of companies that promise to help, you know, startups. What makes you guys different? Why should I choose you?
Look, there's a lot of great startup boot camps, by the way, here. All right. And the only difference that, you know, the only difference with YSP, which is a youth startup program, is bridging the gap between the classroom and the real world through our community. Because we are the only ones, or probably from the few people, all right, that have a community, all right, of startups. There are communities of startups, but don't have, you know, a program for the youth. So we're kind of bridging, you know, both of these worlds between the classroom and the real world. So imagine as someone you know, as a young adult, all right, having access to these people that actually went through it.
Yeah.
You know, you can ask them online. You can ask them, you know, about their experience. You can ask them about a couple of strategies, all right? So this is what will hopefully make us different. Mm-hmm. And look, at the end of the day, you know, it's a mindset, mm-hmm. right? This whole thing is a mindset. Even for us, for adults, being an entrepreneur is all about a mindset. And imagine empowering, you know, a whole generation of young adults, all right, to be basically less afraid of taking risks and less afraid of failures.
Yeah.
Mm. And imagine, you know, a whole generation growing up with such a mindset, the possibilities, you know, that they could create, you know, in the future.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
you start a program. Sorry, to summarize, I guess.
Yeah.
You offer internships after that. There's internship opportunities as well.
There's an internship opportunity after this program.
A community of expertise.
There's a community of founders that you have access to. And it is online, but it's very engaging and immersive, as if it's an in-person.
YSP.ae is the main direct website.
YSP.ae,
exactly. And Founder Connect is the main site, so you can go there. I went through the website. It's very detailed. Everything is there. Yeah. What will you learn in week one, kickoff, AI prompts, and idea generation, going all the way to week 12, demo day, pitch, and voting. So there's all the details that are available there. And the very, very interesting thing for me in this whole initiative is that people who are actual founders will help you understand what you have to go through as a startup founder. So yeah, thank you so very much, Ronnie, for coming.
Thank you so much for coming. Everything you said was very insightful. Thank you.
The MVP part was my favorite, minimum viable product. Yeah. If I come up with some idea, I'll make the minimum viable product as well. Yeah. Thank you so
Give
much,
me a
Ronnie.
Call once you come up with an idea.
I will also join the camp if I'm allowed to. There's two parts MVP. So there's two classes only for MVP. So that's
that's how important
that's the most important part, right? Thank you so much, Ronnie. Thank you so much, Word. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you again for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for watching, everyone. Don't forget, you can follow us on our newsletter, on WhatsApp, Twitter, Facebook, and also Instagram. If you want to keep continue learning more about AI startups, you have Founder Connects. You also have Smashy Business. Make sure to tune in for tomorrow.